Been throwing up for the last 4 or 5 days, and he's got the stomach bug, so I'm not altogether here today, and not quite as prepared as I want to be, but I'm going to do my best, and hopefully that'll be good enough for you guys. If you want to see any of these messages, I made a blog for you guys to go to, thecharacterofgod.com. So you can go up there and see any of these things if you want to look at them or send them to somebody. If you want to see the, if you want to listen to the audio, go to www.onlinethoughts. I'm not spelling online so well. thoughts.com/FCA. And this has to be lowercase right here or it won't work. But, the audio is up there as well. This is the third in a three-part series, just trying to wrestle with the whole spectrum of Jesus' personality, from Jesus' tenderness on one side to his fierceness and anger that's clean on the other side, and his patience in the middle. And the thing I keep going off of is John 14:9, where Jesus says to disciples, he's going to go, he's going to be crucified and killed, he's going to be raised from the dead. They don't know what that means yet. And he says, if you've seen me, you've seen God. He says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And the whole of these three talks, and then I've got one next week as well, it's going to be a little different, is about trying to map out God's character to understand who he is and what he's like and map it directly onto Jesus' character. So if you wonder, what would God do in this situation, you can go look at Jesus in the Bible and say, this is what he did in this situation. That's how I know how God's going to react now. Because I'm hoping you guys are talking to God. And it's difficult sometimes to hear God's voice, and sometimes it's easier, but if you know his personality, you're going to be able to talk to him more easily, because you understand how he's going to act and react. And so that's what these three talks, and this is the third one that is, again, just trying to lay out three different scriptures of Jesus, his personality, so you can pray, you can talk to him, you can trust him with things. Hopefully, you can connect with his spirit in such a way that you're going to have the ability to do things in life that you might not be able to do if you didn't have a belief in God. It's my perception that the wrestling you guys have in high school, and I work in Boulder, so maybe it's more intense for me than it is for you, but I have significant wrestlings with fear to consistently live a life of following Christ in the public arena, because people will find fault with me, because people will put me down, because people might not give me a job. Sometimes I'm sitting at board meetings, and CEOs will be discussing things, and they'll be laughing how, you know, the latest company that one of my companies I work with works in some genetic stuff, and they're laughing how they're going to keep another company out of that market space by doing perhaps some illegal things. And they think that's funny. And I have to sit around a table, a boardroom table of 12 other executives representing the IT department, because I do all the computer things, and not laugh and be the odd man out that thinks, you know, it's not funny that we're threatening another company in possibly an illegal manner. But it's all funny to them. I can't laugh because I know God likes me, and he doesn't want me to laugh at that because we're trying to harm another company. And I feel like the odd man out a lot of times in Boulder in the business world. I don't know if you guys do at high school, but I suspect that the peer pressure is intense to conform to their image, whether, you know, whatever that they're doing now, you know, why go down the list, but, and you're going to stand for somebody that follows Christ. And I think you're going to need strength to see who Christ is and why he is superior to all men and women, any man and woman that's walked the planet, so superior and so great that you'd want to follow him. So that's my goal. And I've just got a little bit of time to do that. So the first scripture I'm going to start with, again, there is the tender side of Christ, and we're going to start with that side. And in John 13, you know, we have this amazing picture where Jesus washes the disciples' feet. And I'm just going to read you a little passage right here. Oh, let's see. Is that the right one? Yeah, my thing fell out. John 13. Now he's about to die. He's connecting with these guys and saying, I'm the uncreated Jewish God that has always existed. The Jews were, you know, the Old Testament. He goes, I'm that guy who's become a man. And now he's going to wash their feet as a representation of how he wants us to serve one another. Only the strong can serve. The weak can only criticize and yell at other people and find fault with other people. It's only the strong that can serve. Only the strong can be patient. It's fools and weaklings that are impatient. Now, there's a whole spectrum in there because I'm impatient, you're impatient sometimes, but hopefully we're learning to grow in greater strength. But weaklings can't be patient. And weaklings cannot serve other people. They don't have the strength. So here's Jesus. It was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world, i.e. die, and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things in his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, wrapped a towel around his waist, and after that he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus replied, you don't realize what I'm doing, but later you will understand. No, said Peter, you'll never wash my feet. Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. And he then goes on to wash their feet. You know, it's amazing that in our whole spectrum of life, we think about great people, and that those may be presidents, it may be the United Nations leader. We may think about Buddha, some consider a great teacher. We may think Gandhi, some consider a great teacher. Some think Muhammad is a great prophet. But when you think about Christ, Jesus Christ, that guy was the most amazing man that walked the planet in terms of his moral character, his supernatural power over nature, his ability to heal people from diseases, and that he died for the world's sins. I mean, unparalleled individual, and most people, they don't spend the time to look at him and they don't appreciate his greatness. Here is this unparalleled man walking the earth. At the end of his life, he gets down on his hands and knees and washes his disciples' feet, one foot at a time, wiping the dirt off, wetting them, you know, drying them, serving them. I mean, it's an amazing picture of how, well, and by the way, you know, he's coming back. The human race gets to make all its choices it wants to. That's the deal. You get to make your choice for good or for evil, and so does everyone else. And the race, our entire race, all of us, Americans, Chinese, Japanese, American, Indian, whatever, British, as a race, we're going to make a choice. And he knows to a large degree the race will choose against God for their own selfish reasons, mostly for money and business. Revelation 19, if you ever want to look at that. Jesus is going to come back at the end of the day and fully establish his kingdom on earth. That's who he is, the God-man who will become king. Now, we don't understand. That's so far outside of our culture, we barely even understand that. We have no concept of the end of the age and how God's going to wrap up the whole of the human race and how his chosen ones, the ones that respond to him, he is going to make sons and daughters of a kingdom that can never perish. And part of that is what we understand of heaven. Here's the God-man getting down on his knees to wash his disciples' feet. I mean, isn't the tenderness of Christ amazing? He covers the whole gamut. Remember how the first time we talked, and we talked about how Jesus would take the little children in his arms when the parents brought them to bless them, just to hold them and to bless them. I mean, my boy's 9 months old, and I love getting my hands on him and praying for Luke before he, in fact, I usually take him on my hands and put him in his crib and put him down at night. And man, I just put my hands on his back for a while. I'm like, oh Jesus, guard my baby. I love this boy so much more than I could ever know. I didn't know how much I could love a son. My mom always said that. You'll never know how much you can love kids, Chris, until you have them. It is amazing, and I just pray for him. You know, Jesus liked to take the kids in his arms, not a quick little thing, a little blessing, all right, hit the road. He's like, no, come here. He wants to hold them, put his hands on them, and spend time with one little child at a time. I mean, that's the amazingness of who Jesus is. Not only is he washing the disciples' feet, but he's praying for the little kids. Well, let's go to the other extreme. Sometimes we understand his tenderness better than his intensity or his anger. And you know what? I'll have to I'll not do my last one. I'm only going to do two today. When you understand Jesus' anger, you understand that it's clean and it works to protect people. Remember, I can't remember if it was the first or second time we talked, and Jesus threw all the business people and all the people making money out of the temple, drove them out with a whip, kicked over tables, and drove everybody out and said, get out of my father's house. This is a house of prayer for all nations. Do you guys remember that? That's his intensity. His anger protects the place of worship so that anybody can come and find God and get to heaven. Well, let's look at a little passage here. This is a part where he is demonstrating his power over nature, essentially. It says, that day when evening came, he said to his disciples, let us go over to the other side of the sea. Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up. That is a storm on the Sea of Galilee. And the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. I mean, the boat's going down. Jesus is in the stern sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, teacher, don't you care if we drown? Jesus got up, rebuked the wind and the waves. Quiet! Be still! Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? Here's the other side of his personality, where you see his intensity versus washing the disciples' feet. He wakes up. I mean, I kind of wonder, what was he dreaming? What kind of dreams does God have? I mean, if you guys read this book, this is a wild book. If you really read it without, you know, filtering it, what do you think he was dreaming about? Whatever it was, he was obviously enjoying that sleep, and this furious storm is breaking out over the ship. There's water in it. The thing's going down. The disciples are freaking out. He gets up, assesses the situation, and says, silence. Now that's power over nature in an instant. That's who this guy is. You know, my father-in-law, my wife's British, and my father-in-law, I love him a lot. My real dad's dead. My father-in-law, he's not a believer, and I love him. I mean, that's his choice. And we talk about God a little bit. He goes, well, Chris, you know, I guess he read that book, Joshua. Remember the one you said? He loved that book. He's like, wow, that made Jesus come alive, Joshua. So by Joseph Gerzon, if you ever get a chance to read the book Joshua by Joseph Gerzon, it's fantastic and just about Jesus. Oh, yeah. So he said, well, Chris, you know, I guess the thing is, you know, just to live a life to follow these principles that Jesus talked about. And I kind of weakly said, yeah, I guess. Oh, I thought this was Bill. And I said, well, I guess maybe that's right. And then later I thought, no. The Christian life, following Jesus, actually, I'm not sure what American Christianity is. I'm not sure it's biblical Christianity. American or European Christianity? I'm not sure. I would go after the Christianity that's in this book. In fact, I'd rather be a follower of Jesus than to say exactly that I'm a Christian, because there may be a difference. But let's not go there right now. He's saying, you know, the Christian life maybe is about following these principles. And I'm like, you know, I'm talking to my father-in-law. I'm not sure it is. Yes, we're supposed to do the things Jesus said, but we're not just following a law, a bunch of rules, like the Buddhist rules or the Hindu rules and the Muslim rules. Because rules and what's right and wrong, that's not going to impart life into us. And Jesus said, I've come down, thanks, from heaven to be a man in this planet, to put life into you. Now, following some rules aren't going to do that. But if you follow Christ instead of perhaps just being a Christian, and He puts His life into you, then when your day comes to die, you're going to smash through death just like He did. And that's the goal. I sit up at 3 a.m. in the morning sometimes and think, God, I'm still afraid to die. I need greater connection with You. Death is our ultimate enemy. He says He'll take us through it. You got to know Him if you're going to get through it. So remember His tenderness, remember His fierceness, and then look at some of His patience in between as well. Okay? Talk to Him, pray, act on this stuff. All right, you guys have a good day.